This podcast is brought to you by Electric Power Systems. EPS is a leading provider of high-power, scalable powertrains that are certifiable for electrified aviation. It develops energy storage systems, DC fast charging stations, and electric propulsion products for aerospace, defense, automotive, marine, and industrial traction industries.
Welcome, everybody, to today's episode of the Aviation Renaissance with Spencer and Spencer. We have another Spencer with us today, Kevin Spencer.
He's like a substitute Spencer, though.
Yeah, you know? He's like...
It's not real. Just a last name.
Second string Spencer. We'll go with that.
He's on the bench, is what we'd say.
Yep. Right? So Kevin Spencer is our Vice President of Programs.
That's correct.
And I'm going to give the floor to you, Kevin.
All right. Yeah, just tell a little bit about myself here. So... I guess as I was thinking about this, I wanted to start with, you know, back in the day.
Back in the day. Okay, how far are we going back in the day? Give us some numbers.
We're going pretty far back to before the even pre-engineer days. And I'll explain why. So engineering wasn't really at the forefront of my mind for a long time.
Like, are we like 15-year-old?
This is before college.
10?
Okay, teenager.
Okay, so teenager Kevin Spencer.
So a little bit about me. I'm a baseball buff. The real part of being a baseball buff is I played it, and it was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that was life for me. And actually, that's what I thought life was going to be, just like every high school student who plays sports does. Right?
Did you high school here in the Valley?
No, I grew up in Colorado. So okay. High school in Colorado.
Yeah. What part of Colorado?
Little bit southwest of Denver. So it was Lakewood.
Okay.
So I grew up there, played baseball there. That was going to be life. I had it all planned out. Got injured my senior year and realized I had this epiphany that if I can't trust my body up through my senior year, how am I going to be able to do that when I'm 30 or 35 or 40? So I had a little bit of forward thinking on this and decided that I needed to figure out what I really wanted to do. However, one of the things that I learned from baseball is that I was really passionate about helping other people figure out what their true potential was. And that's, other than a bunch of other leadership qualities that you get as being a captain of a baseball team, that was one that I particularly felt a lot of fulfillment in, is really helping people see in themselves what they didn't see in themselves. So I knew I wanted to do something along those lines. But I also had this secret passion of data and with statistics.
Well, you're a baseball guy. All baseball guys.
All day.
You got the whip, ERA.
Oh, you got
so you went from player, Kevin... To Coach Kevin.
Kind of.
Okay.
To Captain Kevin, yeah.
Captain Kevin, I like that.
Captain Kevin, that's going to be the name of that.
So,
yep, Captain Kevin.
We can call it Captain Kevin. It'd be better if it was Captain Spencer, but I get it. Captain Kevin. Just not quite as good.
Okay.
We found a love for that. Had a secret love for data, got into that a little bit. Was dead set on being an actuarial scientist. I thought that was cool.
I don't even know what that
is. My brother is an actuarial. Yeah.
I thought it'd be really fun.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, we'll explain it when you're older, okay?
Thank you.
Just think of numbers and statistics.
That hurts my brain to think of numbers and statistics, but okay.
Wasn't sure if I was actually going to be able to help people reach their full potential as that, though. But I love the numbers aspect of it. So... went to college, did a 2-year stint as a service missionary for my church, and realized again how much I enjoyed helping people see the potential that they didn't know that they had.
Right.
Got a lot of opportunities to do that with them and changed my life doing that experience. Came back, became a teacher, actually teaching Spanish. That was something that I really, really enjoyed.
Where did you go to college?
I went to college at Brigham Young University.
Okay. Yep.
And did my undergraduate there. Taught Spanish while I was there. Realized that I liked to teach. I liked to coach. I liked to mentor. Part of the captain thing that instilled in me when I was younger. Graduated with my bachelor's of engineering, mechanical engineering, at Brigham Young University. And then decided that I wanted to go work in automotive. I loved idea of transferring energy from one source to another. So chemical energy into... linear motion, right? That's fun for me.
It's too intelligent for me. That's awesome.
So I went out there and then I did school at the same time. I did a double master's.
Double master's?
I did. It was lifelong learning is a big, that's important to me. So
a master's in mechanical engineering.
A master's in engineering.
In engineering and then your master's in your...
business administration.
Gotcha. Okay.
Went to Purdue and IU for both of those while I was out there.
Good deal.
Loved them. Loved them. Had a blast doing them. Mm-hmm. Really realized that I love engineering, but that I also really love the business aspects of of life. So decided I was going to do both of those.
So you're like a Randy Dunn and Nate Milcom wrapped in one.
Maybe not as good, but...
Don't sell yourself short, Kevin.
It's both of those are passions of mine.
Great.
I've really enjoyed being involved in both of them, getting in the deep aspects of it, but then really understanding that the deep aspects and the technical don't get you anywhere without cost and schedule to allow you to make some profit. So
I love what he's saying right now.
It is important.
I like this.
Very common sense.
Yeah, so okay. It was fun. So that was good. And then finished that up, decided it was time to move back to Utah, and had an unfortunate event with my family that helped prompt that. But it came out here, met with Nate Milcom. He came and showed me the facility. That was 4 years ago. Came and showed me the vision. I loved the idea of getting into electrification. Definitely see a lot of upsides in electrification, it being the new technology. And been here for 4 years and have really enjoyed being both in technical roles and in program management roles.
So you did your master's degrees. Mm-hmm. Well, you came back from your mission.
Yep.
You went to BYU.
Yes.
You get that done.
Yep.
You decide you want to exceed and go do a double master's.
Yes.
Did you work at all while you were in school?
I worked full time. My master's programs were on the side, so I worked full time at Cummins.
Oh.
And
okay.
Did that for 6 years and then did my master's degrees on the side at night.
Gotcha. Because in my mind, I was thinking, okay, mission, bachelor's, master's, EPS. Mm-hmm. So this is... But this is not your first real adult job.
No.
Okay.
No. I've had a couple before this one.
Okay.
But Cummins was unique in that they were really, really great, really great company. But they helped support the funding for my master's degrees. And so I was able to do those on the side at night. My wife and I had an agreement on how much time I would be able to spend on it. And she was super, super supportive and accommodating. So we got those done and moved out here.
Very good. So now you're out here.
We're here.
4 years ago, you meet with Nate.
Yep.
And he pitches electric power systems to you.
He did. Not only the company, of course, he was recruiting me into the company, but also the product that we would be eventually putting into the market and the market that we would eventually be changing for the better.
Very good. So what was your very first program project that you worked on here at EPS? I'm guessing that was probably X57.
No, that one was, I helped support some of the aspects of that, but sure. I actually did two automotive programs while I was here.
Right.
Which I can't talk about the names of them, but I did two automotive programs. I was the responsible engineer for those, so I led all the technical aspects of the programs, and some of the program management aspects, and those were the very first two that I worked on.
So Nate pitches to you, hey, come work at Electric Power Systems because we are revolutionizing aviation. And then propulsion. He sticks you on automotive.
It was more of a conversation of we are revolutionizing propulsion.
Perfect. Okay.
And the fuel system for propulsion. And that was something I was very interested in.
So how does this differentiate between what you did at Cummins, right? So you go from Cummins. How does that relate to, I mean, we want to do aviation, but I guess we'll deal with automotive initially. How did that translate?
Yeah, I mean, there's aspects of both. Like, so I was in the automotive industry, but I didn't actually work on the things that I didn't work on the vehicle. Mm. Cummins isn't a vehicle integrator. It's actually a drivetrain that gets integrated into vehicles. So, for example, your Dodge Ram trucks, right? Mm-hmm. That Dodge owns the truck.
Sure.
But the integration, the actual after-treatment system, the engine, that gets put into the vehicle. And that's what Cummins provided. And even the transmission.
Sure.
Depending on what transmission you have in there. But depending on the transmission, it's a full drivetrain from engine to wheel power. So, in that aspect, it's very similar to what we're doing here. We don't own the aircraft. Mm. We're not developing an eVTOL, for example.
Right.
We're actually providing the propulsion system or the drivetrain aspects of it to the vehicle. So from that perspective, it's not very different. And we're still providing elements into the vehicle that allow it to do things that it's intended to do, such as take passengers from one location to another, take cargo from one location to another.
Sure.
Allow this movement that wouldn't exist if we didn't have transportation. So electric power systems is very similar. We're providing these aspects at a cost that consumers can handle to the market so that we can transport, whether it's people, whether it's goods, whether it's information. That's very similar aspects.
So you started AP Systems 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It's vastly different today than it was 4 years ago.
Yeah, it was. It is.
How has that change been over the last 4 years that you've seen?
Yeah, it's been really intriguing, actually. It's motivating, to say the least.
Yeah.
It's energizing. Some days obviously don't go as planned.
Sure.
Happens at big companies too, happens at small companies. Sure. It happens. It's new, it's unique. When I joined, I was somewhere between number 10 and number 15 on the employees.
Ooh.
So very small. We're above 120 now, so growing quite drastically. And obviously with growing comes some growing pains. Some of that's in our procedures, some of that's in our processes. They're really good opportunities to get things worked out, though, for the long term. So, like I said earlier, I like the forward-thinking aspects of things.
Right.
And this gave us, and me especially, a chance to say, all right, this is how we're doing it today. But what happens in a year? What happens in 2 years? What happens in 4 years? How are we really going to look? What are we really going to operate like? And so that became more of the, yep, I get it today. It's what we're going to do today, and it's how we're going to handle this today. This is what we really want to mature into as we grow and as we get bigger. And those are aspects that I just absolutely love. It really is goes back to that EPS has a potential, right? And the people that are at EPS have that potential, and the market's got that potential. But we can actually help everybody realize that there's a bigger potential than the, just what's being seen.
So you were hired on as a mechanical engineer. So you, 4 years ago,
yep.
Kevin Spencer, mechanical engineer. 4 years later, now we have Kevin Spencer, vice president of product.
Correct. Programs.
Programs.
Correct.
Sorry.
Yep.
That's quite the leap.
Yeah. Yes. It wasn't a, we got this introvert engineer sitting in just crunching numbers getting to that point. obviously, in my experience, there's been a lot of program management responsibilities that have been there. It just happened to be at that time that coming in as a responsible engineer, you owned the technical aspects, but you also owned a lot of the cost and schedule that went in the projects too. And we were at such a small scale that you wore multiple hats.
Right.
You didn't have a lot of program managers in the company. We had one. You didn't have a lot of responsible engineers at the company. I think we had two at the time.
Right.
So you still are exercising different roles and responsibilities, regardless of what your title is when you're that small. But a lot of experience and exposure led to I could handle that aspect of it at the time that the company needed, and I was well interested in joining and being a part of the EPS team at that time. And I knew that I knew what was going to come in the future.
Well, it kind of makes sense. When I started 2 years ago on the operations floor, it's like, okay, who's the PM for this project? Kevin Spencer. Who's the PM for this project? Kevin Spencer.
Yeah.
Okay. I think a better question would ask, what is he not the program manager of? And it was pretty much none of them.
At the time, that is correct.
Yeah, yeah.
So and nobody knew that more than me.
So let's for people. Be careful, I say people who don't know what programs is, right? Because that means different things to different businesses. Give us Kevin Spencer's program managing 101 at EPS. Like, let's not do the Boeings or the Airbuses. Let's do EPS's program managing 101.
Yeah, sure. Some details into that specific title. So program management at EPS is we have a project, whether that's a customer who's asking us to deliver a battery system to them, or whether that is an internal project that's asking us to do an element of a battery system that's new, unique, or novel, right?
Right.
We have a plan that's put in place. And the program manager is fundamental in helping to develop what that plan looks like. Just like every project, it's a temporary endeavor that has a start date and an end date that has to meet certain objectives. And those certain objectives are done for a certain cost and within that schedule, but also meeting the quality and the deliverables that are needed, right? So a typical program at EPS is we have our requirements. Mm-hmm. We start into our development phases. Sometimes those are multiple iterations. Maybe it's just one iteration, depending on the program or the project. Then that moves into different aspects, not just in the design, but into what does manufacturing look like on a production line? What does supply chain look like at high volumes? What does quality look like as we get these programs rolled out, right? All these different aspects. A lot of them are planned into the program from the beginning. So we're trying to not get hit with things that nobody knew about, right? That's a good program manager. They manage the scope of a program. They go through, they build those units. They test them. Tests are great. They go well. Some tests don't. You learn what you needed to learn, right? That's part of development.
Right.
And you recover, you respond, you build back, and then you end up shipping the deliverable, whatever that might be, whether it's a battery system, whether it's test data, whether it is information. All of that gets set up. The program manager handles all of the cost aspects. They monitor cost of the program, they monitor schedule of the program, and then they monitor the team's involvement and their health in getting the program done and executed.
So not a whole lot.
No.
Yeah, not really.
I'm trying to take notes.
Just a thing here and there. Just a thing here and there.
Sure. So it's been mentioned a few times before from Nate and Randy and Mike and Spencer. Steven. We've talked a lot about Epic.
Yeah.
But we haven't really got our deep dive into Epic. We've gotten kind of a taste from Randy Dunn about what it can do and what it can't do. We've gotten kind of a taste from Stephen Hall about our different Epic lines and what they are. Let's take some time and tell our listeners about our electric propulsion ion core, otherwise known as Epic, our flagship product that we're working on now.
Sure. From what aspects? Programmatic, technical, you just want me to talk through
everything?
Okay. It's good because I've seen Epic from the ground up. When the initial concept was derived, the idea behind it was we are seeing enough visibility into customers' needs that we now have an idea of how to best help the market move forward. And not just move forward technically, but move forward from a cost perspective too, so that it's not something that is unreachable or unattainable by the masses. And that was the idea. Transportation really enables a lot of different things to move from one location to another, but if it's only put in the hands of one person or one company, it's not as effective. And so the idea was, what does that battery system need to look like that helps not only technically enable an aircraft to fly, but allows it to do so at a cost that is economical for the company, is economical for the user. And the way to do that is to really look at what technology are you introducing into the battery system. So a lot of that is available on the website. You can see that there. But what's the business case behind it? Now, some of those details, obviously, we're not going to talk about, or we can't talk about.
Sure.
But we know that customers are responding well to it, and that's helping them enable their business case. And really, if we're not helping them enable their business case to be successful, we're not going to be successful. And so a lot of what Epic was derived on was customer feedback of what they needed to be successful in their vehicles. And so these building blocks allow our customers to do that. They allow our customers to not only do it technically, but to do it economically as well. And so a lot of that was built into the many hours that we've spent perfecting this technology and perfecting the business case. Yes, it's great that we're able to do it for us to keep us running as a company, but the more important thing is that we enable our customers to be able to operate, because then we're really enabling a market that hasn't existed before to be truly successful from the get-go.
I think that's a really good point to bring up, the cost effectiveness of it, because what we're trying to do is, if Spencer and I wanted to, we could buy a string, mm-hmm. buy a BMU, buy a midpoint disconnect, and he and I could go into my shop and build an eVTOL. Granted, it would probably explode and crash on the first test flight.
We'd probably be dead, but it would theoretically be fun.
What we're doing at EPS is allowing the masses to be able to have access to that kind of energy.
Yeah. It becomes a product that obviously you can start to take advantage of economies of scale.
Mm-hmm.
You get the product to a point where you're building this for many applications and allowing those many applications to be successful. You're driving the cost down to give more people, more companies, the opportunity to use the technology mm-hmm. to benefit their business cases, and ultimately really, really looking at the success of this market as a whole.
I think we need to kind of clarify a little bit. I know that we've all said, and we've talked on here about building blocks, right? And I think a lot of our listeners may think that that's a figure of speech, but it's not. It's literal. These are literally building blocks where you can hook individual modules together mm-hmm. to get the power sources, the power levels that you need.
That's right.
They're literal building blocks, and you can put them in any kind of configuration to fit whatever kind of mode of transportation you're putting them into.
Oh, yeah. It's like a grown-up's Legos, especially for engineers.
Whoa.
Well, I think for somebody my age, it would be more like an Erector set.
Okay.
Kind of the
Legos
same thing.
It'd just be Legos, guys. just flat-out Legos.
Yeah, but it's that ability to be able to adapt to different situations and circumstances quickly.
Sure.
Without having to go through a huge amount of additional cost just to make something custom for a vehicle or for a person.
I guess hypothetically speaking, so we are an aerospace company, but we're not limited strictly in aerospace. If a customer was so inclined and wanted to build an electric vehicle, they could take Epic and put it in their electric car, mm-hmm. truck, whatever it is, and power it that way. So it's not specific for aviation. That's where we're driving towards, because we want to change aviation to electric, but it's not solely for Mm-mm. aerospace.
It'll be certified to aerospace standards, which right. allows it to be on those aircraft. Those mm-hmm. certification standards are different for automotive
sure.
and driving around in automotive. So,
but it's usually a little bit more rigid for aerospace right? So that's something that we're trying to work through, obviously. And this leads me to my next question, Kevin.
Sure.
What is the future of electric power systems?
No,
he giggles.
I get excited about it, actually.
That's good.
Well, great. You got about 8 to 10 minutes to talk about it.
Okay, sounds good. I think what the more interesting thing is what's the long-term look for the market and for the customers.
Right.
And part of that is because what we're doing here is we're enabling them to be successful, right? Mm-hmm. Where we are helping our customers reach their full potential that they didn't know that they could have. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. General theme mm-hmm. of mine. But we're looking at a market that is very new. It's very mm-hmm. green. It's learning, it's growing, it's developing. And of mm-hmm. course, we love being on the front lines of that, mm-hmm. learning what we need to, understanding what we need to, gathering the feedback that we need to, right? That's like an engineer's dream house.
Yeah. That's right.
Being in the sandbox there. But at the same time, it allows us to really provide what we need to provide to our customers who may not know what they need yet.
Mm-hmm.
So from a company perspective, that looks great, because that gives us the opportunity to really scale quickly, get our product into a lot of different hands to get experience. Mm-hmm. It allows us to take on bigger, larger programs, to allow us to really dive into some deep technical issues. I mean, it gives us the chance to really expand quite largely, to give other people opportunities who, you know, might come in as responsible engineers to be, you know, leaders and managers within
right.
the near future. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I see the future of EP Systems as bright. It's, you know, we want to say the sky's the limit. I think from some of our programs, it's the universe is the limit, right?
It is. Yep.
Going to space.
Yes. Yeah. So there's great things. It's motivating. I chuckle a little bit because of how much could happen in the near future. And even in the long-term future,
right.
and how much we're driving to make that happen. So, mm-hmm.
I think you brought up a good point that to help enable our customers with things that they may not even know that they need.
Yes.
Meaning, they come to us and say, we're wanting to build an eVTOL. And this is what we're wanting to do for the propulsion system. What can you guys provide to us? Can you design us a propulsion system? And rather than going through the aches and pains that we have done in the past to research and development and design something specific to them, this Epic line allows us to say, hey, guess what? We already have something that's done, it's built, it's designed. This is what you'll need. And in turn, that speeds up their process.
Absolutely.
Their innovation process and getting them off the ground, literally and figuratively, so they can take their company into the future.
Yeah, and to do it quicker too.
Right.
And that's such an enabler for a lot of companies. We hear a lot of companies say, hey, like, you've got this ready, I'm ready to go. I can't get some of these things from other companies for years, right? Because the technology's not there. So it's definitely an advantage for us, of course, but especially for our customers.
And that came through all of our failed testings that we did and batteries going into thermal runaway when we didn't expect them to. But it's a learning curve, and now we've learned, okay, if this happens, we need to contain it this way. We need to mitigate risks this way. And it's been a very crazy ride in just the 2 years that I've been here.
Oh, yeah. It's fun. It's when you think about it, you go into a test, for example, with an expectation. Mm-hmm. And that expectation, of course, is to pass. What does pass really mean? Like, you've got your criteria. Everything's going to go perfect, right? Sure, we think that's a pass. and then we measure it, and we can say, okay, it didn't pass the criteria.
Right.
So is that a failure? Maybe it's a failure, but the only failure is the one that you don't get back up from. And so then you can say, all right, well, the product's done. But what we just did is learned a significant amount about that system that we hadn't, we knew we were going to learn during the development, and now we had the opportunity to learn. So, of course, every engineer goes into a situation and says, hey, I designed the perfect thing. I'm going to go test this thing just to show it. And we learn that we don't. And that's such a good thing to handle now and to really, really understand the material choices that we're using, understand the packaging methods that we're using, understand the technologies that we're dealing with, and doing that all during this development phase. It really is a joy. And then you get to that point where now you really have to run that test. And everything goes flawless, and that is such an amazing feeling, right? That's what you did all of that work for. That's what you went through the supposed failures for to learn, but it ended up being a learning success for everybody.
So I'm not going to use names.
Oh, I thought you say
or programs, even though it's been released to the public, and I only say this because out of consideration for the engineer on this one, although he will know who I'm talking about.
Okay.
One of our programs that we worked on, it took us 13 tries.
Oh, sure.
Just to pass, to say this module is good.
Yeah, and that's the development that EP Systems puts into the systems before they get to the customers. It's important for us to have a quality product that goes out to people and goes out to our customers. So that's the rigor and the work that goes into it. Does that really hurt a program at times and the schedule? Yes, but at the end of the day, these are development programs that we're working through, and that is something that's to be expected.
I can tell you it hurt my sanity building 13 of those because there was so much hardware in that one program to make sure that it was a quality product, but more importantly, that it was a safe product, that we knew it was safe, that we felt confident sending it to a customer, knowing that a pilot was going to be in this and their life is on the line.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll do whatever it takes to make that a safe product.
Hey, and you're an expert at building that now.
I know. Exactly. Times.
We know exactly who to go to.
Well, that was the 13 that we just built to pass testing. That wasn't all of the modules after that passed that had to get built that went out. I still have.
So you know how to build it wrong is what you're saying.
Very much
so. That's what you're telling me. Kevin.
Well, I know how to build it according to the wrong designs of the engineer.
Okay, blame the engineer.
It's all in the development.
It's always the engineers.
That's why we have the development.
Yeah. Yes.
It's important to go through that. It's important to learn what we need. That's what that's one of the things I actually do really love about the company is that we learn those things and make sure that we learn them before they go out to the customers as well, just like you said.
Right. Yep. So we're about out of time here. Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners about electric power systems?
Yeah, I think I would just encourage all the listeners to come check us out. Check out the website. Feel free to reach out to us on LinkedIn. We're definitely interested in talking with you. This is a great market. It's a fun market. It's a new technology. Mm. We're really interested in providing a product that enables greener transportation and opportunities to reduce costs at all levels to our customers. So I think it's fair to open that up and say, hey, if you're interested in coming and working for us, obviously we have a lot of positions that are available. If you're interested in doing business with us, we've got a great sales and BD team who will help figure out exactly what it is that you need for the system and get some prototypes into your hands if you're doing demonstrators. But I think the overarching invitation is come check us out. Come say hi. Reach out, even if it is just to have a discussion. Would love to hear from you.
And that's from our VP of programs, who I think you're probably in the chaos the most, right? I think the program managing office is just like, you think of chaos all around this core, and like program is the core. Yeah. So if he can have a positive attitude about this, then I think most of us can.
Oh, there's a lot of things to be positive about.
So that's true. Well, appreciate it, Kevin, being on here on our show.
But thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Listeners, go to our website, epsenergy.com, and see our link tree below. We'll continue to come out with these weekly, but listen to this episode over and over again, because Kevin has some good nuggets in here. So thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week.
This podcast was brought to you by Electric Power Systems. EPS is a leading provider of high voltage, high power, certifiable electric power systems for high reliability applications. Its mission is to power transportation's electric renaissance by providing smarter, safer, more reliable, lighter, and certifiable batteries.